Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. Our guest today is the heartbeat of community empowerment in Toledo. She heads both the movement and Here's My Turning Point at the historic Frederick Douglass Center, lovingly known as the Doug. From youth programs to food access, civic engagement to digital equity, Tina Butts is showing us what real change looks like and that it starts at home and ripples out. Tina, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, thank you for coming. Now, Tina, for our listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell us about the Doug and what you're doing there and as well as the movement?
Sure, I would love to. Frederick Douglass, also known in the community as the Doug, you know, it's a legacy there. It's a foundation. Most people in our community feel that it's a safe place. For the community is where you can just go in and feel safe, where you're not going into a cold environment, unsure on what's going on. It's a resource. It's a food. It's programs. It's kids. I mean, it's got a very loving reception when you walk in there. And it's not like running like a basic 9-to-5. It's home to a lot of kids where they can come and eat. Where maybe they don't even have food at home.
Yeah,
they can engage in programs. And we have a behavioral health program inside the Doug that kind of let us work with the youth. You know, a lot of the youth, you know, in that area, you know, deals with behavioral health, whether it's depression, loneliness, tragic things in their lives. We set up different programs for them. They're scared to speak. I mean, it's amazing. It's beautiful. Because we watch the youth grow. When they come in the door, they're hurting, they're in fear. They don't understand. And we build relationships with each individual. Sometimes we go into the homes, we talk to the parents where they don't have any food, bedding, and things like that. So we want to make a difference in a community where it's not only reaching the kids that come there, it's also taking it to their homes so they're safe.
Well, now tell our listeners, just in case they don't know, where is the Doug located?
The Doug is located at 1101 Indiana.
Okay.
In Toledo, in the heart of the city.
It's definitely the heart.
I mean, we got people that's older than I am that used to go there and play basketball. We had Myron Duhart grew up right across the street. Okay. That's where he went every single day play. You know, and they named the park after him. They just named it Myron Duhart Park.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And anytime you talk about the Doug in our community, everybody knows where it's at.
Well, now I know that your program is both behavioral health and a treatment program, right?
Yes.
So who do you actually serve? Is it just the youth? Is it both youth and adults?
We serve youth, adults, and seniors.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't turn down nobody. We have different locations throughout the state. It's throughout Toledo, not the state. We haven't expanded that far yet, but we have several different locations. We just wanted to meet people where they are, and they're in that community.
So in this landscape, we know there's a lot of good work happening, but there's still gaps that people experience every day, right?
Absolutely.
So what do you feel like some of those gaps are?
Where I come in, and we see a lot because we keep a lot of data, learning or who to contact for the resources that's in our community. And we understand because we, including myself, lived in this community, we didn't know that a lot of resources even existed.
Right.
They don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. They don't know who to call on. They have fear. Some people don't know how to run the computer systems. And when you call these places, they say, oh, we online.
Right.
People don't even have a computer, no less internet. And then they're not even savvy or know how to even work a computer, and it's fearful. They shut down, and that's where they lose out. They lose out of housing. They lose out of food. They lose out of medication. They lose out of insurance. It's just really, you know. But the word of mouth that we are in there, we get a lot of people from day to day.
Okay.
That call on us, that need us, you know, and we'll go to them. We have plenty case managers. We have people that have served them, you know, so because we've been there. We know the struggle.
Yes.
So we just have to go to them, and they feel safe with us. That's the beautiful part about it. They'll call and be like, hey, I want to join your program. Hey, my kids need your service. You know, my grandmother, she's been depressed, and the house won't come out.
Yeah.
So now we have grandmothers coming in, doing sewing classes, making cookies and bacon. We getting that old school bag. Remember back in school, elementary, where you had grandmothers that when you was kids be like, hi, granny, in school, and didn't know the lady from the man in the moon. So we're trying to bring all that back.
Yeah.
Because they got a lot of programs going. Outside of here's my turning point.
Okay.
They got a list of programs that they're reinventing the dub with the ability to have the money to put in there to put a brand new basketball. I mean, they fixed the roofs. They did a lot of things. The city had gave them money, like $2.5 million,
oh, wow,
to go in there and kind of rebirth the dub.
Yeah.
Yep. So
I that made a big difference.
Place. Yeah. You know, you got, it's exciting. You know, people should go and take a tour during the day. Even they have youth programs in the evening now, but school's about to let out.
Right.
And that's when the dub is really full of kids. Some kids sign up for different programs. But no kid is turned away. They can come in there and play basketball. They can come in there and join any programs. You got Owens doing GED classes.
Okay.
You got daycares in there. It's a list of things that go on there.
Wow, yes. That's amazing. And I understand people get intimidated by the internet a lot of times,
yes,
these gadgets. I know I do.
Right, me too.
Yeah, but my grandma always said, closed mouths don't get fed, right?
Right.
So if you need help, you know where to go. So now I am interested in the movement that you run. Can you tell me a little bit about it and just how you all do things differently on the ground?
Okay. The movement started like in 2018.
Okay.
It was a lot of, you know, myself and a few bail bonds that were going to the court system and, you know, posting bonds. Not only do we just do bonds, we do business bonds, anything that need to be bonded and insured, guardianship bonds. Ticket machines have to be bonded and insured. We do travel checks bonds. Anything that says bond, we're able to do. However, we were looking at the judicial system.
Okay.
And we were seeing a lot of things that wasn't fair. You know, people would call us and be like, can you get me out of jail? And I only have this amount of money. And I have a bond for like $3,000 because I wasn't able to pay my insurance. So we was like, wow, the judge gave you a bond like that. If you can't pay your insurance, how are you going to pay to get out of jail?
Right.
So I started a system that I would put people on a payment plan.
Okay.
You know, I would put the signers on the payment. I said, you know, somebody, we have excellent judges, don't hear me wrong. But we realized that there was people that needed to be in those seats that understood because they there to service the people.
Yeah.
Criminals are a different story, but right now we're talking about people that barely can afford groceries. Mm-hmm. So what we did, we heard that someone was running for judge.
Okay.
So we started going down to the early voting polls right after we leave the courthouse, rallying up, and we noticed that we go live, have music playing, and I mean people were coming out of nowhere to sign up for being voters for the first time. And we were able to make a major impact. And then we kept going and we kept getting involved in different things in the community. And I was like, dang, y'all, everybody's not a bail bonds. We got to come up with a name. We got to do something. We got to make some moves. And actually, it was Fletcher. He interviewed us. And he said, so what you calling yourself? I said, we just making some major moves. He said, what, like the movement? I said, that's it. That's the new name. So that's kind of how we birthed the movement.
Okay.
And then we wanted to get away from a lot of the political world.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted people to understand we're here to service our people.
Yes.
And we got out, we started building, you know, and people started joining by the thousands. We have thousands of people in the movement. They felt that they was a part of something that was helping people. Mm-hmm. And that's all people really wanted, to be somebody, to be able to know where all the resources at. We would go through the doors and be like, look, y'all here, y'all gonna help these people. We not moving. You see all them people outside? Okay? But you're about to service our people in this community. We made some people mad along the roads. But everyone that we have made and had some bad relationships in, we end up becoming good friends. Mm-hmm. Because one thing they understood about the movement, we're here to serve and help the community.
Yes, and that's what matters.
We didn't accept money from a lot of people because we didn't want them to feel they owned us. Mm-hmm. So we worked tirelessly off of love for the community. So then we end up getting a call that they said that they was going to shut down the Greenbelt, Cherrywood's apartment over there. And we had a lot of people coming crying and so me, myself, County Commissioner Pete Gerken, we all walked over there. I mean, I agree that some of the conditions was horrible. Yeah. But my worst fear was, you got kids, grandparents, that if y'all shut this down, mm-hmm. where are they going?
Where are they going
to
go?
Yeah. Make it make sense to me. Mm-hmm. They was like, well, the brick and mortar is bad. I said, well, the brick and mortar in these buildings downtown where you work at is bad, too.
True.
We're talking about our people in our community. And I had the ability to get in touch with HUD. And they said, well, you know what? We're going to work with Tina. And the owner said that they would do whatever they have to do to fix them. So we passed the first inspection, which they didn't believe was going to happen. They didn't have an office manager. They didn't have none. We went in there, and I mean, 80% of them didn't have heat for 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
They had to lose electric heaters. And, you know, people just don't know what they don't know.
That's true, yes.
And they end up getting a property manager. We was there. I had a movement team of 10 there every single day, cleaning the grounds, cleaning the hallways, cleaning up. And not only the beautiful part about it, we were showing them different resources. That the first day was giving us a little back because of that community could be a little wild.
I understand.
And I'd be like, look, y'all better back up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because most of y'all know us. While we over here, we not tolerating none of that. And they end up coming on board, help cleaning up, help, you know, with the kids. I said, y'all going with all the gunplay. You know, let's look. We trying to save these babies home.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was so beautiful. That they did, we did a huge event over there. Every resource from CSB, I mean, we blocked the streets off. It was beautiful, where people were actually scared to come over there.
Wow.
And they thought it was awesome. But we saved that apartment, and we got out here, and we vaccinated over 70,000 people. I had to fight with a couple people there. I was like, no, y'all about to give us our shots. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we had a lot of challenges, you know, but now I think at this point we're partnered up with ProMedica. We partner up with a lot of people on all kind of stuff. You can go to the website, you know, and look at that and see what we do. We do a lot of Souls to the Polls where we get people out to vote.
Okay.
We want people to realize that the movement is here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting resources to serve our community,
yes.
We're coming through that door. You're going to serve our people.
I know that's right. Now, I know our elders always said it takes a village.
Yes.
So now our listeners know where the village is.
Yes.
How can they get involved?
They actually can call the movement's hotline,
okay,
which is 419-450-3325. They can go to our website, which is the movement. TeamLucasCounty.com. They can get information. They can probably, our office is downtown, 316 Michigan, right across from the library on the second floor.
Oh, nice. Everything's very accessible.
Oh, yeah. We're right there in the heart of it all.
That makes a big difference. I know that you talk about like paying it forward. What shifts when someone goes from receiving help to then becoming part of the solution? Like what does that look like?
I mean, they so proud. Normally, every day I wear my movement shirt. You'll see them out here with purple movement shirt. We have the ability to hire people. You know, we pay them $15 an hour. They out in the community. We were able to pay at least 10 people when we was in a Greenbelt, $15 an hour. And I mean, it's just like people that feel they never had a chance to get a job. They never was able to be accepted where people respected them.
Yes.
You know, when they walk in with the purple shirts, they be like, oh, you with the movement. And that's just gratifying itself to see how they're happy that they are part of something and not in the game.
Yeah.
Or not running around here doing something. Because a lot of things, which being a bail bondsman, I'm really strict on committing crimes and all that. But we had people have turned their whole life around for being a part of something greater.
That's powerful. Each one teach one, right?
Exactly.
And we have to lift each other up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we try to educate people on what's going on. Like we know in November coming up, it's going to be over 600 to 700 seniors getting displaced.
Oh,
the government is no longer going to fund. But our people are not aware. They're not going to be aware to what happened. So where are our commitments come in to letting people get prepared? You know, let's sit down, let's talk to them, what we gonna do? If we can do anything.
Yeah.
Just like the food stamps. When we talk about grassroots, we get down in the dirt. The grass ain't even came up yet. Okay?
Well, on a lighter note, with that being such a strong community hub at the community center at the Doug, I know it's been around for over 100 years, right?
Yes.
What does it mean to carry that legacy forward, not just for you, but for everybody involved?
Leadership, most of all. You know, they have a great board. Steve is the president of the Dub, and they're growing every day. They're developing new programs. You know, they're getting the right people in place to know how to make a difference and what the people need and not just a rah-rah event, not just a one-time pull up and we're going to feed you.
Mm-hmm.
When you got people with leadership, those are the people that should be in those offices to know what it takes. Even though you might need people with the education and then to run the business side up here, but when you out here, if you walked up to me, I can see if you fake or phony. That's how we relate to people.
Yeah.
They might be like, I can't spell this, I can't spell that, but people feel you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the right people that need to continue to work at the Dub. And that's what people assume, that I'm coming to somewhere, like I said in the beginning, somewhere safe where I can get resources, where people are glad to help and don't make you feel like you're begging when you walk in there. You follow me?
I do.
So it has to continue with the right people in order to continue to grow.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for all the hard work you do for our community. It makes a difference. And now our listeners know exactly where to go and who to come see.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. Now we are speaking with the woman helping make art feel alive for everyone. Rhonda Sewell is the Director of Advocacy and External Affairs at the Toledo Museum of Art, recently voted the best art museum in the U.S. 2 years in a row. But Rhonda's work is about more than accolades. It's about making space for every voice. Rhonda, welcome.
Thank you, Asia. I am so very happy to be here. I remember when the truth started. So I've always been a longtime fan. So I am so happy to see this format on WGTE.
Yes, thank you. Now, 2 years in a row. Oh, my goodness. Best art museum. Best free museum. What does this win mean, not just for the Toledo Museum of Art, but for our city and the people who live here?
It really puts us in another category. We've always been known as a world-class museum,
yes,
especially by those of us in the museum field. But this USA Today 10 Best Reader poll really puts us in another category. And it's really funny, our sister museum right across the road, the DIA, or the Detroit Institute of Arts, came in second. So really, it bespeaks of the popularity of the Midwest,
yes,
to offer arts and culture.
That's amazing. Now, how does this recognition impact the city and our community?
I think the recognition, it was a reader poll. So it really says something about where people's hearts are as far as love for the Toledo Museum of Art. We took what's called a listening lab in the beginning of our director, Adam Levine's administration. And this was really the 2-mile radius around the museum. And we found that there was sort of a disconnect between residents and their misnomers about the museum. We've pretty much, most of our history, been a free museum for entry, but a lot of people thought there was a huge cost to get in. Some people felt like maybe they didn't belong and didn't dress right for, you know, going to a museum.
Okay,
they just didn't have that long history. And we have worked tirelessly to make sure that not only our staff feels welcome, but our external visitors feel welcome. And you can tell by that change, because USA Today editors even said we blew everyone out of the water with people calling and voting every day,
wow,
for us to be the best museum, as you stated, 2 years in a row. That just doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
So it really is great for the reputation of our community.
Yeah.
We've had a self-esteem problem years ago. We no longer have one.
Good.
You know, as the saying goes, you will do better in Toledo. I think people believe that now. And we have great other anchor institutions that have also been awarded, you know, number one spots in the entire USA. It really says something about the heart and grit of this community.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And now parking's free too, right?
Parking is free.
Ooh.
We were just talking about that before you and I got on the air. Taylor Automotive, a generous gift. And now we have free parking as well. Asia, we've actually seen an increase in visitorship because of that. So that was a barrier.
Yeah.
You know, a family of four coming in, even with free entry, parking is still a cost. And
yeah,
so now we've removed that barrier, and it's all about access for everyone.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. It absolutely does. So now, why do you feel like some communities may still feel disconnected from spaces like museums?
That's so interesting, because a serious time in our country happened about 5 years ago when we saw a lot of social unrest.
Right.
And museum directors around the country got together and said, you know, we've been offering this art, and some museums are free, others there is a cost, but what is it that we are doing wrong? And what they found was that no one was really in the arts and culture sector, not just museums, but across the sector. They weren't really nurturing or fostering a sense of belonging for everyone,
right,
to make everyone feel seen and heard. And so we have worked really, really hard in doing that. And now visitorship in our 2-mile radius, which really is about 5 zip codes,
yeah,
of very distinct neighborhoods. But we found that some of those neighborhoods have one thing in common, a lower socioeconomic, you know,
yes,
reality. And underrepresented and marginalized folks are living in these neighborhoods. And you have this world-class museum, which prior they felt disconnected to. We have a robust outreach department,
yes,
that is doing all kinds of things, like stepping outside of the museum, going into the neighborhoods on a regular basis, and building that trust. And I think that has been the key. Now people come in and kids come in, they know us,
yes,
they know the instructors, and they also, Asia, and you and I have talked about this, the importance of seeing themselves reflected
Absolutely.
Through the art.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done things like hire curators who specialize in African art and Asian art and Native American art. I mean, we are really looking at the museum representing everyone and giving also that global context of how interconnected art is. There was trade a long time ago. You know, where did Italy get all that ivory from?
Yes.
To make those beautiful sculptures. We yes. know they got it from the continent of Africa.
Right.
So we are just demonstrating that and in a really profound way.
Mm-hmm.
And it is reflected in our repeat visitorship, our
right.
increased visitorship, and just how people feel now. There's a sense of real pride and connection to the museum.
Absolutely. Even for myself, my children mm-hmm. attend the museum often in the summers and take classes. And my mother, she has worked for the Board of Developmental Disabilities for over 40 years. So I really wanted to ask you if you could really break down your work around accessibility, because I know you were working on a new initiative. And I think it's amazing. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes. So access has been really something that has led us. We are actually the first major museum in the country to have an actual position, a manager of access initiatives.
Wow.
It's now an endowed position.
Really?
So the person in that position, it's called the Conda family manager of access initiatives, and many people in the accessibility community and persons with disabilities know Katie Shelley, and she is herself a person who lives with a disability.
Yes.
And so it's just been an amazing thing for us. We have so many access initiatives. She used to be in my department, and I can say that I was the one that really signed the deal to get her on board.
Oh,
and
love that.
So she always thanks me all the time, but really she's been incredible. She's done an audit of our access needs. And when we say access in persons with disabilities, we are not just saying someone who may utilize a wheelchair.
Right.
We're talking about seen and unseen
mm-hmm.
Persons with disabilities. And then I'm overseeing right now a project. We're calling these projects. I'm the project lead of a committee I gathered in the museum that's looking at ASL, which is American Sign Language, and the deaf community and hard of hearing community. So we are looking at ways that we can implement initiatives, activities,
yes.
offerings for this particular population. We seek really, Asia, to be the model museum in all categories, not just access,
yes,
but in
I love
all
that.
Categories. In fact, I have a meeting later today to give an update on this, and we've really sought the expertise of people in the state who are experts in the hard of hearing and deaf community. And we found from one of those experts that we should also be including those who are blind, legally blind, and different
yes.
categories of that population, because some of that intersects.
Right, it's
yeah.
the overlap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And access can also mean access that we talked about earlier in the interview about socioeconomic barriers.
True.
So we want access both for persons with disabilities, seen and unseen, but also persons who may have socioeconomic barriers.
Yeah, that's so important. I love that you all are making sure to bridge all those gaps.
Mm-hmm.
You said that being asked to lead doesn't mean you have all the answers. I love your social media. I absolutely follow you. Now, how do you lead when the answers are still being built?
That's a great question, Asia. That's a great question. So I've just been raised by parents who always were active. I've always been a self-described servant leader before servant leader became fashionable,
mm-hmm.
a fashionable term. My parents just led with conviction and belief in what they stood for. And so that's, I think, what got me hired at the museum. I had a long career at the library system, and I was a reporter for The Blade for about 18 years.
Yes.
And you have to lead with that kind of conviction. But being a servant leader is almost an oxymoron. You know, you're a servant, but you're a leader. How is that? And I've just always understood that term, mm-hmm. that being a leader doesn't always mean that you have, like you said, you don't have all the answers. So you seek the expertise of others who are skilled in that subject matter,
yes.
to assist you and to guide you, and then you make your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just always been that type of individual. And in the work I do as director of advocacy and external affairs, that's really I always say a glorified lobbying job. I'm not a registered lobbyist, but it's a lobbying job. And we work with legislators and elected officials in the state,
okay.
and Congress to bring them closer to our mission for policy changes, for funding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really important to do that. But you can't walk into a legislator's office knowing all the answers, especially
sure.
if you're seeking funding. You know, you want to listen a little bit, but also bring them closer to understanding why we exist.
Well, now, for those people who just haven't been to the Toledo Museum of Art in years, or even ever, how would you invite them to come this spring and summer?
Oh, gosh. So this spring and summer is so interesting because the Toledo Museum of Art is actually going through a transformation.
Really?
We're actually calling it Transformation 2027.
Ooh.
I always think I need like music behind me when
yes.
I say
dun,
Transformation
dun, dun, dun.
2027.
I love it. Yes.
But it is a 2-year project. It's a total rehaul of all of our galleries. I call it a reinterpretation, but also a reimagining of our galleries. And so I would still invite them there, but they're going to see some galleries close, and then mainly all of them closed in the summer,
okay.
June of the summer. But we were not closing down.
Okay.
So that's the interesting thing. Some museums close for 2 years and then reopen with a ribbon cutting. We wanted people to keep their jobs.
Absolutely.
And so we have the Peristyle, which is our 1,500 seat theater.
Okay.
That will remain open. Our family center, which services all the kids in
yes,
the, in,
we love the
yes,
family center, yes.
In our community, that will remain open. And also the Glass Pavilion, which is located across the street. It's a Pritzker Prize winning building, which is the highest award you can win in architecture.
Oh, wow.
That will be open as well.
Okay.
So there will be some mini exhibitions over there, our hot shop where we blow glass, still available. Even events will be going on in the glass salon inside. So don't stop visiting
yes,
the museum.
Don't stop.
It just will be a little bit limited into some of the art that you can see.
Okay. Is there anything else interesting that we need to know about what you all are planning either for your reopening or what's coming up next?
Well, we don't want to give all the secrets away about the reopening, but I think it's really important for listeners to know what they will experience in 2027 when we do reopen. This is going to be a layout that will be more chronological in order. And we spoke about earlier the interconnectedness between, let's say, Italy and Africa or other continents and other countries with trade and art and that kind of thing. So we'll have maybe 16th, 17th century, 18th, 19th,
oh, wow.
but everyone will be together. So we won't separate an Elizabeth Catlett maybe from Van Gogh. You know, you might see them next to each other.
Oh, that's cool.
So we want to just really tell a story and a narrative. It's already getting attention from some national press about how our philosophy is about that interconnectedness, but also that chronological order. So they need to know that. We also, this is a busy season right now. Prior to spring and summer, is we are looking at funding from state capital budgets to
yes.
Also congressionally directed spending. So we are really looking for our Northwest Ohio elected officials to also understand how important arts and culture is to our community. It is, to me, the museum is the crown jewel of our community.
Yeah.
But we can't have that and be this third space or living room of the community without support. And so we have a wonderful endowment from the Libbys who created and founded the museum.
Yes.
Glass Mogul, very well known. Libby is a very well known name. And Florence Scott Libby and Edward Drummond Libby, married couple who with others founded the Toledo Museum of Art. The Scotts, Florence Scott came from this really art collecting family.
Oh,
and I always say, I think it was her idea.
Yes, I love it.
But all of that being said, it is one of those institutions in our community that everyone should just visit, even if you don't have capacity to visit all of the time. And if you haven't been since like your third grade field trip, it's time to come back and just spend a little time in the museum, walking around and looking at our offerings. And boy, in 2027, when we reopen with that global connectedness, that chronological order, and just a new way of looking at art, plus some major construction going on as well. So the layout will be totally different. That's going to be a win, a big win, not only for us in the museum field, but for the entire community.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming today and for giving us the exclusive about 2027. So
thank you, Asia. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. Now we're talking about park trails, rivers, and green spaces. Felisa Crockett is Director of Community and Organizational Impact for the Toledo Metro Parks. She's helping people reconnect with nature, and trust me, there's something for everyone. From free programs to family adventures, Felisa is here to remind us that the best therapy comes with a breeze and birds singing. Felisa, welcome.
Well, hello. How are you today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm awesome. Awesome, awesome.
Now, Miss Felisa, let's be real. We're heading into spring and summer, but there's a lot of families in our area that just are not stepping outside. Why do you think that's happening?
Well, that's really the lifestyle that we're living in today. As you know, when we were growing up, being outside, it was a default.
Mm-hmm.
We went outside all of the time.
Yes,
but technology has changed that, how we live, work, and even how we relax.
Sure.
We're constantly on our phones and streaming. And I know even myself, sometimes instead of going out for a walk, I relax by watching TV. So there's actually a term for this, and it's called nature deficiency disorder. And it's from a book that's called Last Child in the Woods. And what's powerful about this is what we used to know, what we used to just do, go outside, the outdoors is good for you, is now backed up with research. Nature isn't just nice to have, it's essential. And so I just think the reason why people are not going out is because we have just resorted to technology.
Yeah, I know that my grandma would say, get outside, get some fresh air, right? That's medicine. So
yeah.
I guess our grandparents knew.
We used to, from the time we woke up in the morning until our parents called us in, we would be outside, you know, and we created our own play, and we just don't find that anymore.
So. No, you're so right. What do you think people are missing by staying indoors?
Well, the hard truth is that people just aren't taking advantage of what's in front of them right now. I think it's habit and it's perception. You know, people think, I don't have time to go outside. Yeah. It's too far. I don't know what to do when I get there. But the reality is right here in Lucas County, there's a Metro Park within 5 miles of every home in Lucas County. So it's not just access. I think it's awareness.
True.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's awareness. It's the routine that we've become so comfortable with. And sometimes I just think it's our comfort level. And that's why we are at Metro Parks, we're so intentional about creating spaces and programs that feel welcoming. We want people that when they come in the Metro Parks, we want them to know that these are their parks.
Yes.
And we want it to be easy and worth choosing staying besides staying on the inside. So we had some work to do, but
we do. I remember my parents say, turn that TV off. And now they're probably saying, go ahead and watch that.
Oh, yeah. You know, even kids, you know, and to keep them occupied, we immediately put them in front of a phone that we've downloaded a game on, or we put them in front of their favorite show instead of kids going outside to play. So.
No.
A new reality.
I learned something new. I didn't realize that Metro Parks are 5 miles from every resident in Toledo. So that's pretty powerful.
Yes. We have a park within 5 miles of every home in Lucas County. And that is very, very intentional because we know that green space is therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, what does the Metro Parks actually offer that people truly just don't realize?
The first thing is it's free. A lot of people, they're not aware that our parks here in Lucas County, our Metro Parks, are free. Sometimes people have a safety perception. Some people just need to feel like this space is for me.
Yeah.
And so our work is not just building parks. It's about building belonging and habit. And so what we want to do is we have programs and we are out in community and communicating that these spaces are for everyone.
Now, I know you were saying that you all have a new community advisory board.
We do. We do. We have a community advisory board that we launched last year. And the purpose of this advisory board, I think my new word is intentional.
That's a good word.
So we know that the parks belong to everybody. If we didn't have our community, we wouldn't be in business. Our residents here pay our salaries. And so what the community advisory board does is two-way communication. We want to make sure that we are aware of what's going on. And then we have community advocates who sit around that board and they go out and share what's going on in Metro Parks with their community. So the goal of this community advisory board is to be surrounded with a representative from every zip code in Lucas County. And we're not there yet. We're very intentional, again, that word again, about who sits around the table, because we want folks who are really plugged in to community, who really care about their community. And this advisory board meets once a quarter. And we just met a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we wanted to share is that downtown at Glass City, we have a river walk that is under construction. And we are halfway done.
Really?
Yes. 5 miles on each side of the river. We have reclaimed this space, and one of the things that this community advisory board is doing is we will have a big celebration of our halfway mark that's in June.
Okay.
And this community advisory board is taking this information, sharing it with their community so that we make sure that everyone shows up in the celebration.
Yeah, that's important. We want everybody to get out, get yourself some sunshine, right? My grandma said sunshine fixes a lot of things.
Yes, it does. Yes. It does. And we know that. You know, even nowadays, sometimes doctors write prescriptions for outdoors.
Wow.
You know, and so we now know the benefit of being outside and fresh air and green space. So,
yeah, I was thinking, like, how does really getting outside truly impact your mental health, just your family and the whole community at large?
Yeah. So one of the things that we like to challenge families to do is to maybe start off and travel out to oak openings and maybe take your family fishing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, go to another metro park and have a picnic or go and watch the ducks. Or if you go out to some of our parks, for example, out at Howard Marsh, we have like over 300 species of birds out there. So you can bird watch. And these are just ways that I think that folks, they just don't take advantage of the free things that are available regardless of your socioeconomic level. Parks are free and parks are for everyone.
Absolutely. I was just thinking like the whole atomic family. So what do you think is fun to do for the different age groups?
Well, we start young.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. We start young. Our programs are, if they're not free, they're extremely affordable. So we start by even going into Head Start programs or having, we have a program called Toddler Trails, where we're bringing 2 and 3 year olds into the parks and they're going on a trail walk just to get them familiar with some of the things that are outdoors and to get them familiar with being outside. Mm-hmm. Kids, if we introduce it to them, I really believe that this is something that they will gravitate to. So we start young, and there's something for everyone, even our camps. We have nature camps. And one thing that we've been doing for like the last 10 or 15 years is Connections Camp. So for even kids who may not be able to afford camp, we provide it free of charge, a week in nature that starts in the summer. So every summer, we are teaching kids how to catch their first fish. We're going on nature walks. They're kayaking and canoeing and exposing them to some of the things that they may not be exposed to every day. So if you know someone who wants to be a part of one of our camps that run every summer when school is out, all the way back into, I mean, camps go into when school starts again, just call Metro Parks. So that's 419-407-9700. And regardless of your socioeconomic level, we make it happen because we have grants for regardless of what your income level is. So we start them young. We have camps for everyone. We have kayaking. We have tree climbing. There is something for everyone, no matter how old you are.
Yeah, I love that. And it's good to be able to get the grandparents with their grandkids and really bridge those gaps.
Absolutely. And even, I don't know how many folks have been down to Glass City. We have a ribbon. So in the wintertime, you can ice skate. And in the summertime, we roller skate.
Oh.
And Glass City is a reclaim. It's in the middle of a reclaimed area. Vistula is on one side of the river. And then on the other side of the river is over where Waite High School is. But what we have found is that when there is a park in neighborhood, we have found those people who didn't have a nice park. That park has become theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So community is showing up. If they don't have money for skating, we provide free tickets. And then right in the middle of there is Poco Piatti's. And so there's food. You can eat Or if you don't want to pay for food, you can bring your own lunch. So something for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. Because me and my best friend, we took her aunt down there to that park. And she has dementia. And when I tell you, she perked up. Mm-hmm. Like, everything changed. She started having memories. It was really powerful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I get out there as much as I can since that experience.
Yeah. Well, Glass City is a game changer. It's so unlike any of our other parks. Like I said, you can roller skate. And then on the other side of the river, there's Toledo Pickle. So if you haven't played pickleball, if you want to learn how to play pickleball, there's something else to do there, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I really like to paint the picture for people. So you've done a really great job of that already. But if a family has just one full day this spring or summer, how would you guide them through the perfect Metro Park Toledo experience from start to finish?
Well, one of the things that we have, I don't think a lot of people know that we have tree houses.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, we have tree houses that are out at oak openings. And again, Metro Parks was very, very intentional. We are aware that everybody cannot afford some of the programs that we have. So if folks can't afford to stay a night in our tree houses, we have Monday nights that is free to community. So I would say to a family, start off, maybe you can do an overnight at one of our tree houses. And then you can get up and you can go on a walk out at oak openings. Another thing that they could do free of charge, they could fish. And then from there, just hop to another park. There's tree climbing, lots of things to do. Or just walk and explore. Sometimes we are absolutely surprised at what we'll find in different parks. Another thing is we have 19 parks.
Yes, that's a lot.
Yeah. I would highly recommend for a summer excursion is maybe every day or every week, put on your calendar to visit a few different parks that you've never been to before.
Yes.
Yeah, we have a lot that I think people don't even realize that are there, like Wiregrass, Providence, Farnsworth. Those are parks that are way west, but if I tell you they are drop-dead gorgeous, you would think that you're in another country. Just gorgeous.
That sounds amazing. I'm definitely going.
And free. Yeah. And free.
Yeah, I think we really forget that peace honestly doesn't cost a thing.
Yeah.
We're missing peace a lot of times with staying glued to these devices.
Yeah. Well, I would. One of my favorites is Providence, and so when we go back to recommending something for a family to do, picnic with your family by the water.
Oh yeah.
Such peace. Yeah.
You can't beat
something
it.
That we typically don't do anymore. And no reservations needed. Just a blanket. Yes. And some sandwiches.
And I find that these devices really give my own children anxiety a lot of times.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Learning to fish and sitting, I mean, teaches you patience, if nothing else.
One of the things, you know, I was born and raised in inner city right there on Norwood. But when I started working for Metro Parks, a lot of times our environment changes things. So I learn how to swim. Because it's so often folks who didn't have access to water growing up, and that opens up something else. So now when I travel, one of the things that I love to do is I'll go swimming or I will go snorkeling. Being in parks, being in nature opens up more experiences that we may not have had. And so I would highly recommend for people to just get outside of themselves.
Yes.
And try it. Try a hike. Try a bike ride. Take your bikes out.
Yes. Exercise too, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming today. I learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did as well.
Well, thank you for having me. And everyone, just remember, parks are for you. They're yours. And they're free.
Yes. Thank you for joining us on A Moment of Truth.
Hello, this is Fletcher Word, publisher of The Sojourner's Truth. It has been our pleasure to present Moment of Truth as part of WGTE's Local Thread. We want to thank WGTE for this opportunity, and a special thanks to our various hosts, our reporters, Asia Nail and Alexander Leatherberry, Pursuit magazine publisher Stacy Fowler, and travel agent Ricky Tyus. Thank them all, and thank you for listening and being a part of The Local Thread and A Moment of Truth.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.